Chapter 3. Having royal blood is a really big pain. Trust me, I have some very good sources on this. They all agree, being a king stinks. Royally. First off, there are the hours. Kings work all of them. If there's an emergency at night, be ready to get up because you're king. Inconvenient war starting in the middle of the playoffs? Tough. Kings don't get to have vacations, potty breaks, or weekends. Instead, they get something else. Responsibility. Of all the things in the world that come close to being crap-a-flap-nasty, responsibility is the most terrible. It makes people eat salads instead of candy bars, and makes them go to bed early of their own free choice. When you're about to launch yourself into the air strapped to the back of a rocket-propelled penguin, it's that blasted responsibility that warns you that the flight might not be good for your insurance premiums. I'm convinced that responsibility is some kind of psychological disease. What else but a brain malfunction would cause someone to go jogging? The problem is, kings need to have responsibility like nothing else. Kings are like deep, never-ending wells of responsibility. And if you don't watch out, you may get tainted by them. The Smedri clan, fortunately, realized this a number of years back, and so they did something about it. "We did what?" I asked. "Gave up our kingdom," Grandpa Smedri said happily. "Poof! Gone! Abdicated!" "Why did we do that?" "For the good of candy bars everywhere," Grandpa Smedri said, eyes twinkling. "They need to be eaten, you see." "Huh?" I asked. We stood on a large castle balcony, waiting for a crawly, whatever that was. Singh was with us, along with Bastille and her mother. Australia had stayed behind to run an errand for Grandpa Smedri, and my father had disappeared into his rooms. Apparently, he couldn't be bothered by something as simple as the impending fall of Mokia as a sovereign kingdom. "Well, let me explain it this way," Grandpa Smedri said, hands behind his back as he looked out over the city. "A number of centuries ago, the people realized that there were just too many kingdoms. Most were only the size of a city, and you could barely go for an afternoon stroll without passing through three or four of them." "I hear it was a real pain," Singh agreed. "Every kingdom had its own rules, its own culture, its own laws." "Then the librarians started conquering," Grandpa Smedri explained. "The kings realized that they were too easy to pick off, so they began to band together, joining their kingdoms into one, making alliances." "Often that involved weddings of one sort or another," Singh added. "That was during the time of our ancestor, King Leavenworth Smedri the Sixth," Grandpa continued. "He decided that it would be better to combine our small kingdom of Smedrius with that of Nalhalla, leaving the Smedris free of all that bothersome reigning so that we could focus on things that were more important, like fighting the librarians." I wasn't sure how to react to that. I was the heir of the line. That meant if our ancestor hadn't given up the kingdom, I'd have been directly in line for the throne. It was a little bit like discovering that your lottery ticket was one number away from winning. "We gave it away?" I said. "All of it?" "Well, not all of it," Grandpa Smedri said. "Just the boring parts. We retained a seat on the Council of Kings so that we could still have a hand in politics, and as you can see, we have a nice castle and a large fortune to keep us busy. Plus, we're still nobility."
"So what does that get us?"
"Oh, a number of perks," Grandpa Smedri said. "Call-ahead seating at restaurants, access to the royal stables, and the royal cinematic carrier fleet. I believe we've managed to wreck two of those in the last month. We're also peerage, which is a fancy way of saying we can speak in civil disputes, perform marriage ceremonies, arrest criminals, that sort of thing."
"Wait," I said. "I can marry people?"
"Sure," Grandpa Smedri said.
"But I'm only 13.
Well, you couldn't marry yourself to anyone. But if somebody else asked you, you could perform the ceremony. It wouldn't do for the king to have to do all of that himself, you know. Ah, here we are. I glanced to the side, then jumped as I saw an enormous reptile crawling along the sides of the buildings toward us, like a spider crawling across the front of a fence. Dragon! I yelled, pointing.
Brilliant observation, Smedri, Bastille noted from beside me.
I was too alarmed to make an amazing comeback. Fortunately, I'm the author of this book, so I can rewrite history as I feel necessary. Let's try that again. Ahem. I glanced to the side, whereupon I noticed a dangerous scaly lizard slithering its way along the sides of the building, obviously bent on devouring us all. Behold, I bellowed, 'tis a foul beast of the nether hells. Stand behind me and I shall slay it.
Oh, Alcatraz, Bastille breathed, thou art awesome-ish and manly-ish.
Lo, let it be such, I said.
Don't be alarmed, lad, Grandpa Smedri said, glancing at the reptile. That's our ride.
I could see that the wingless, horned creature had a contraption on its back, a little like a gondola. The massive beast defied gravity, clinging to the stone faces of the buildings, kind of like a lizard clinging to a cliff, only this lizard was big enough to swallow a bus. The dragon reached Keep Smedri, then climbed up to our balcony, its claws gripping the stones. I took an involuntary step backward as its enormous serpentine head crested the balcony and looked at us.
Smedri,
it said in a deep voice.
Hello, Tsoktinatin, Grandpa Smedri said. We need a ride to the palace, quickly.
So I have been told. Climb in.
Wait, I said. We use dragons as taxis?
The dragon eyed me, and in that eye I saw a vastness, a deep, swirling depth. Colors upon colors, folds upon folds, it made me feel small and meaningless.
I do not do this of my own will, young Smedri, the beast rumbled.
How long left on your sentence? Grandpa Smedri asked.
300 years, the creature said, turning away. 300 years before they will return my wings so that I may fly again.
With that, the creature climbed up the side of the wall a little farther, bringing the gondola basket into view. A walkway unfolded from it, and the others began to climb in.
What did he do? I whispered to Grandpa Smedri.
Hmm? Oh, first-degree maiden munching, I believe. It happened some 4 centuries back. Tragic story. Watch that first step.
I followed the others into the gondola. There was a well-furnished room inside, complete with comfortable-looking couches. Drowlin was the last one in, and she closed the door. Immediately the dragon began to move. I could tell by looking out the window. However, I couldn't feel the motion. It appeared that no matter which direction the dragon turned, or which way was up, the gondola occupants always had gravity point the same way. I was later to learn that this, like many things in the Free Kingdoms, was due to a type of glass, orientation glass, that allows one to set a direction that is down when you forge it into a box. Thereafter, anything inside the box is pulled in that direction, no matter which way the box turns. I stood for a long time, watching out the window, which glowed faintly to my eyes because of my oculator's lenses. After the chaos of the explosion and my near death, I hadn't really had a chance to contemplate the city. It was amazing. As I'd seen, the entire city was filled with castles. Not just simple brick and stone buildings, but actual castles with high walls and towers, each one different. Some had a fairy tale feel, with archways and slender peaks. Others were brutish and no-nonsense, the type of castles you might imagine were ruled over by evil, bloodthirsty warlords. It should be noted that the Honorable Guild of Evil Warlords has worked very hard to counter the negative stereotype of its members. After several dozen bake sales and charity auctions, Someone suggested that they remove the word evil from the title of their organization. The suggestion was eventually rejected on account of Gerstack the Ruthless having just ordered a full box of embossed business cards. The castles lined the streets like skyscrapers might in a large Hushlander city. I could see people moving on the road below, some in horse-drawn carriages, but our dragon continued to crawl lizard-like across the sides of buildings. The castles were close enough that when he came to a gap between buildings, he could simply stretch across. "Amazing, isn't it?" Bastille asked. I turned, not having realized that she'd joined me at the window.
"It is," I said.
"It always feels good to get back," Bastille said. "I love how clean everything is. The sparkling glass, the stonework and the carvings."
"I would have thought that coming back would be rough this time," I said.
"I mean, you left as a knight, but have to come back as a squire."
She grimaced.
"You really have a way with women, Smedri. Anyone ever told you that?"
I blushed.
"I just...
Dang.
You know, when I write my memoirs, I'm totally going to put a better line right there."
"Too bad I forgot to do that. I really need to pay better attention to my notes."
"Yeah, whatever," Bastille said, leaning against the window and looking down. "I guess I'm resigned to my punishment."
"Not this again," I thought, worried.
After losing her sword and being reprimanded by her mother, Bastille had gone through a serious funk. The worst part was that it was my fault. She'd lost her sword because I'd broken it while trying to fight off some sentient romance novels. Her mother seemed determined to prove that one mistake made Bastille completely unworthy to be a knight.
"Oh, don't look at me like that," Bastille snapped.
"Shattering glass! Just because I'm resigned to my punishment doesn't mean I'm giving up completely. I still intend to find out who set me up like this."
"You're sure someone did?"
She nodded, eyes narrowing as she grew decidedly vengeful. I was happy that, for once, her wrath didn't seem directed at me.
"The more I've thought about it," she said, "the more the things you said the other week make sense. Why did they assign me, a freshly knighted girl, on such a dangerous mission? Somebody in Crystallia wanted me to fail. Someone was jealous of how fast I'd achieved knighthood, or wanted to embarrass my mother, or simply wanted to prove that I couldn't succeed."
"That doesn't sound very honorable," I noted. "A knight of Crystallia wouldn't do something like that, would they?"
"I don't know," Bastille said, glancing toward her mother.
"I find it hard to believe," I said, though I didn't completely believe that. You see, jealousy is an awful lot like farting. Neither is something you like to imagine a brave knight being involved in, but the truth is, knights are just people. They get jealous, they make mistakes, and, yes, they break wind. Though, of course, knights never use the term break wind. They prefer the term bang the cymbals. Guess that's what they get for wearing so much armor. Drow Lynn stood at the back of the room and, for once, wasn't standing in a stiff parade rest stance. Instead, she was polishing her enormous crystal sword. Bastille suspected her mother had been the one to set her up, as Drow Lynn was one of the knights who gave out assignments. But why would she send her own daughter on a mission that was obviously too hard for her?
"Something is wrong," Bastille said.
"You mean, aside from the fact that our flying hawk mysteriously exploded?" She waved an indifferent hand.
"The librarians did that."
"They did?"
"Of course," Bastille said. "They have an ambassador in town, and we're going to stop them from taking over Mokia.
Hence, they tried to kill us. Once the librarians try to blow you up a few dozen times, you get used to it."
"Are we sure it was them?" I asked.
"One of the rooms exploded, you said. Whose?"
"My mother's," Bastille replied. "We think it might have come from some detonator's glass slipped into her pack before she left Nalhalla. She carried that pack all the way through the Library of Alexandria, and was set to go off when she got back in range of the city."
"Wow,"
Elaborate. That's the librarians. Anyway, something is bothering my mother. I can tell. Maybe she's feeling bad for punishing you so harshly. Bastille snorted. Not likely. This is something else. Something about the sword. She trailed off and didn't seem to have anything else to add. A few moments later, Grandpa Smedri waved me toward him. Alcatraz, he said, come listen to this. My grandfather was sitting with Singh on the couches. I walked over and sat down next to my grandfather, noting how comfortable the couch was. I hadn't seen any other dragons like this one crawling across the walls of the city, so I assumed that the ride was a special privilege. Singh, tell my grandson what you've been telling me, Grandpa Smedri said.
Well, here's the thing, Singh said, leaning forward. This ambassador sent by the librarians, she's from the Wardens of the Standard.
Who? I asked.
It's one of the librarian sects, Singh explained.
Blackburn was from the Order of the Dark Oculators, while the assassin you faced in the Library of Alexandria was from the Order of the Scrivener's Bones. The Wardens of the Standard have always claimed to be the most kindly of the librarians.
Kindly librarians? That seems like an oxymoron.
It's also an act, Grandpa Smedri said. The whole order is founded on the idea of looking innocent. They're really the deadliest snakes in the lot. The wardens maintain most of the Hushlander libraries. They pretend that because they're only a bunch of bureaucrats, they're not dangerous like the Dark Oculators or the Order of the Shattered Lens.
Well, act or not, Singh replied,
they're the only librarians who have ever made any kind of effort to work with the Free Kingdoms, rather than just trying to conquer us. This ambassador has convinced the Council of Kings that she is serious.
I listened, interested, but not quite sure why my grandfather wanted me to know this. I'm a rather awesome person. Have I mentioned that? But I'm really not that great at politics. It's one of the three things I've no experience whatsoever doing. The other two being writing books and atmospheric rocket-propelled penguin riding.
Stupid responsibility.
So,
what does this have to do with me? I asked.
Everything, lad. Everything, Grandpa Smedri pointed at me. We're Smedris. When we gave up our kingdom, we took an oath to watch over all of the Free Kingdoms. We're the guardians of civilization.
But wouldn't it be good if the kings made peace with the librarians?
Singh looked pained.
Alcatraz, to do so, they would give up Mokia, my homeland. It would get folded into the Hushlands, and a generation or two from now, the Mokians wouldn't even remember being free. My people can't continue to fight the librarians without the support of the other Free Kingdoms. We're too small on our own.
The librarians won't keep their promise of peace, Grandpa Smedri said. They've wanted Mokia badly for years now. I still don't know why they're so focused on it, as opposed to other kingdoms. Either way, taking over Mokia will put them one step closer to controlling the entire world. Manhandling moons. Do you really think we can just give away an entire kingdom like that?
I looked at Singh. The oversized anthropologist and his sister had become very dear to me over the last few months. They were earnest and fiercely loyal, and Singh had believed in me even when I'd tried to push him away. And for that, I wanted to do whatever I could to help him.
No, I said. You're right. We can't let that happen. We've got to stop it.
Grandpa Smedri smiled, laying a hand on my shoulder. It might not seem like much, but this was a drastic turning point for me. It was the first time I really decided that I was in. I'd entered the Library of Alexandria only because I'd been chased by a monster. I'd only gone into Blackburn's lair because Grandpa Smedri had urged me on. This was different. I understood then why my grandfather had called me over. He wanted me to be part of this. Not just a kid who tags along, but a full participant. Something tells me I'd have been much better off hiding in my room.
Responsibility.
It's the opposite of selfishness.
I wish I'd known where it would get me.
But this was before my betrayal, and before I went blind. Through one of the windows, I could see that the dragon had begun to descend. A moment later, the gondola settled against the ground.
We had arrived.